My guest at this time is Adam Levin. He's the founder and chairman of Cyber Scout. You can find out more about what he does at cyberscout.com. Adam is also the author of the Amazon bestseller Swiped: How to Protect Yourself in a World of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. We want to get his reaction today to the immense data breach at credit giant Equifax that compromised the sensitive data of roughly 143 million people. For the next few moments, we'll discuss how this could happen, whether the government needs to respond in some way, and how to protect yourself, if possible, from something like this. And Adam, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me, Greg.
Well, Equifax and the other credit monitoring agencies certainly put a premium on us making smart decisions and keeping up with our responsibilities. They're, I think, implicitly trusted to take care of our data since we run so much sensitive information through them. So how did this happen?
Well, apparently there was a vulnerability in software that they were using that created a sort of a gap in their web security. And as a result, the bad guys got in, crawled around for a few months, and had access to a staggering amount of information. And, you know, this goes back to the whole concept of technology and reliance on technology and understanding that technology is not the solution to security, that you have to create an environment, a culture of privacy and security within an organization. Everybody's got to buy into it. Everybody has got to be at the top of their game, because every minute of every hour of every day, hackers are doing everything they can to constantly assault every web base or every database we have, looking for the mother lode. And this time, of all times, they really hit it.
Describe the culture in a little more detail. What does that look like? You could probably have a company, even maybe Equifax, saying, well, we've been diligent around the clock, and we didn't realize that we had this vulnerability, so this happened. So what advice do you have for folks to build and maintain this culture?
Well, you know, it's what I call the three M's, and I talk about it in Swipe, both for consumers and for businesses. And the first is, how do you reduce your attackable surface? How do you minimize the risk? The second is, how do you monitor? And the third is, how do you manage the damage? Now, for an organization, this means, above all else, yes, you need good technology. You need to update your technology. Think about all the ransomware attacks and all of the businesses that were literally shut down for periods of time because they didn't properly back up, they didn't upgrade, they didn't do the updates when they should have done. I can't answer for whether or not Equifax did those things or not. You need to have extensive employee training programs, not when someone starts and the anniversary of their employment or every quarter. Cybersecurity education, cybersecurity best practices has to be literally part of the fabric of every day. Everyone has to feel a sense of ownership. You have to have a chief information security officer. Equifax has been advertising for a chief information security officer. They don't have one right now. I'm not sure whether or not they ever had one, but I know they don't have one now, and that's been an issue. And it's one of those things where when you have data, I think you have a fiduciary responsibility to the people whose data it is to make sure that data is safe. And remember, with a company like Equifax, it's not like people chose to give their information to Equifax. These folks are data brokers. They got the information for a variety of different sources. They slice it, they dice it, and they sell it. And there has not been sufficient regulatory oversight of these kinds of situations. So, you know, the first M is that, what kind of access does an organization permit to its most sensitive information? What kind of security protocols do they have in terms of the people who access it? Are people allowed to access that data using personal devices? You know, these are all questions that every institution has to ask itself. So that's the first M. The second M, monitor. People need to be monitoring systems. They need to be looking for vulnerabilities. They need to patch those vulnerabilities immediately. They need to be monitoring their vendors, because in the world we live in, you are your vendor. If something goes wrong with a vendor that leads back to you, or data that you have something to do with, it becomes your liability and your problem. So you need to do that. And you need to have systems that monitor data exfiltration. So that means that is an unusual amount of information leaving your system? Or can you see someone crawling around your system, and then what do you do about it? Data needs to be encrypted. Data needs to be, security needs to be layered so that even if someone gets into one level of the company, they can't necessarily get into the most sensitive information held by the database of that company. And the third thing is you have to have a real plan to deal with breaches. Now, this is a company that gets hired by other companies to deal with breaches. And yet, they were very clumsy in the way that they dealt with this breach. Yes, they had a website that was pretty good in terms of the information it made available to people, but the website was not necessarily securely constructed, the one they set up to deal with people who were freaking out about the breach, that several browsers identified the website as a possible phishing website. They had an issue there. They had an issue with the fact that they were overloaded by practically every human being in America picking up the phone and calling them when they heard about this. They may not have made proper provisions because I don't think they ever expected anything at this level. You also have to deal with people empathetically. And a lot of consumers were saying, now, wait a minute. You're telling me that first you're not going to pay for my credit freeze, which I should get. Then you are going to pay for it, but you're only going to pay for it for 30 days. You also put a provision in there that if you give me free monitoring and resolution services, that I have to sign away my right to participate in a class action lawsuit, which there was a huge brouhaha and they backed away from that. And even the statement of the CEO saying this is a disappointing event. This isn't a disappointing event. This is an outrageous event. It is a completely embarrassing event. It is a dangerous event.
So their failure in protecting the data is one step, and their colossal failure in responding to it in terms of their public response on multiple levels has been a key issue here as well.
Yeah, and not only that, but they were offering this free service for a year. Now, one thing is clear. If it's a credit card situation, you make a phone call, 5 minutes, new number, most cases problem solved, plus you have zero liability. Bank account, a little bit more complicated. When you're dealing with a Social Security number, this is forever. The Social Security Administration almost never will agree to change someone's Social Security number. So if your Social Security number is on a database that is compromised, you will be looking over your shoulder for the rest of your life. And for the institution that basically exposed your data to come back with a program saying, hey, don't worry about it, we're going to take care of you for a year, things are good. It's like you're looking at them like, are you out of your mind? You have exposed me. I'm going to be looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life. And the best you can come up with is 1 year of credit monitoring and maybe a little identity monitoring and some resolution services. Come on.
Adam, you mentioned a moment ago that you believe this industry that Equifax is part of is underregulated. We've seen some calls from members of Congress to have a response to this. Anything specific that you think they ought to consider?
Well, I think that, you know, first they have to take a look at the way that the reporting agencies are actually making sure that the data that they have is accurate. But that's literally a different subject, but it's part of what the congressional regulation debate was all about. However, New York State, for example, has an extremely comprehensive, very tough set of data security regulations, and they're administered by the New York Department of Financial Services, and they just went into effect. And a lot of people were complaining that they think they're almost draconian, but the truth is, when you're dealing with data and sensitive data, you have to be almost draconian in regulation of an industry because the fallout from a breach like this can not only be devastating to consumers, but it can be devastating to businesses. It can be devastating to the government in terms of tax collections and everything else. Think of what this breach has opened people up to. New account fraud. obviously a burden on business and consumers. You have medical identity theft. This could be a burden on government, business, and consumers. Tax fraud, a burden on consumers, government. Child identity theft. You could be destroying lives with this. Synthetic identity theft. That's where they take your Social Security number, my name and address, someone else's birth date, create the equivalent of a bionic person, and then at some point, the trail of breadcrumbs, if something goes wrong, first leads back to the person whose Social Security number was compromised. And then the last one, criminal identity theft. That's where someone using your information commits a crime, and the trail of breadcrumbs leads back to you. And you're driving down the street, you're pulled over to the side of the road by law enforcement for a busted taillight. All of a sudden, your car is surrounded by guys with guns. You're thrown on the ground, handcuffed, and hauled off, in some cases in front of your wife and kids, or your husband and children. So, I mean, there are incredibly serious ramifications of all this. Also, example, someone gets your Social Security number, gets employment in your name, as it were, using your Social Security number, and the income from that job is reported to your Social Security number. So all of a sudden, the IRS is on your tail saying to you that you woefully underreported your income. So these are just some of the ramifications of something like this, and this impacts our entire society.
Adam, just a couple of minutes left here, and the sobering reality of what so many people could be facing as a result of this and other breaches that we've talked about in the past is just enough to make your stomach turn, if not more. So, and stories like this just seem to convince people, and perhaps they're right, that the bad guys are just way ahead here. The bad guys are winning, and it's almost impossible for the good guys to keep up. So other than going off the grid, maybe even that's not enough, what do you do to prevent this?
Well, again, you have to exercise the three M's now on the personal side, which means, first, how do you minimize your risk of exposure? Well, strong password protocol, not authenticating yourself to people who call you, making sure that the only time you authenticate yourself is when you're calling the institution, understanding the IRS doesn't call you or send you email or text you, using two-factor authentication. So anytime someone attempts to access an account, specifically financial accounts, that you're notified and that a code has to be sent to your cell phone or wherever you designate it that you have to enter before they can continue so you could stop them. Freezing your credit, which you have to do with each of the three bureaus, but it stops anyone from opening new accounts in your name. The second M, monitor. Know what's going on in your credit report. Know what your credit scores are, and if they take a sudden drop, understanding it could be that you're a victim. Checking your accounts on a daily basis, you're signing up for alerts from your financial institutions that notify you for free anytime there's activity in your accounts just for you to make sure it's you. Checking explanation of benefit statements from your medical provider just to make sure it was you and not someone masquerading as you that was getting treatment. Getting more sophisticated forms of monitoring programs that monitor your identity. And last, managing the damage. And a lot of people don't realize that there are many institutions out there, insurance companies, financial institutions, even employers, who offer programs to help consumers get through identity incidents. And in many cases, it can be free as a perk of your relationship. So check with your insurance agent, your financial services rep, the HR department where you work. Say, do you have a program to help me through an identity incident? Am I in it? If not, what do I need to do to get in it? Is it free? Or what's it going to cost? And I guarantee you, whatever it costs is incredibly reasonable compared to the pain that you'll suffer by becoming a victim of one of these kinds of scams that relate to identity theft.
Adam, this is frightening on so many levels, but you've explained the process well and how to deal with prevention and monitoring and how to respond if it unfortunately happens. Thank you, sir, as always, for your expertise.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Adam Levin, founder and chairman of CyberScout, also the author of the Amazon bestseller Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.